Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject of God. We're so glad you could join us on this cold day in New Jersey. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we warmly welcome you all. And we'll start today with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 165 of Miscellany and 65 of the Blue Book, Divinity Course in General Collectania. Goodness never fails to receive its reward, for goodness makes life a blessing. As an active portion of one stupendous whole, goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, "What am I?" With a scientific response, "I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness. And this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing. God alone governs all, is all in all. God is our constant guide and guardian. No mortal thought, known or unknown, seen or unseen, can interfere with the manifestation of love's presence with us. The weather manifests God's government, and no evildoers can change this fact. The devils of human thought, or the powers of many minds, are powerless in love's presence. God is all. God is mind." Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 390. Watch that you realize in your work of healing the sick, that the absolute truth is what does the healing. Mrs. Eddy once said, quote, "Meet every false claim with the absolute truth. Nothing short of that will answer." Also, she said, quote, "Strive to work from God instead of up to God. If you work from the standpoint that you are absent or separated from God and must work up to Him, how can you ever do this? Since if you are absent from Him, how can you ever make the demonstration to be present with Him? The absolute truth declares that you are now in the presence of God, united to Him and reflecting His power. The only basis of successful demonstration is that now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. We are already in the presence of God, and victory is already established." Mrs. Eddy said to Irving Tomlinson, quote, "I have always known that victory is as certain now as it will be a century hence," end quote. We do not try to work up to perfection or health. We do not use understanding to heal the sick. We use understanding to know that there is nothing to heal, since the kingdom of God is here and now, and in man. Once Mrs. Eddy asked a student how he would meet a certain condition of disease. He replied that he would try to realize some particular statement of truth, which he quoted. She said, as a shadow of disappointment passed over her face, quote, "I hoped you would not need to realize your way into truth, but would start there," end quote.
Thank you. Okay, comments with this?
Oh, I loved what it said. We are already in the presence of God.
Yeah.
And victory is already established. And the story in the Bible of Jericho, it's definitely the wonderful demonstration of that. But we have to know, or I have to know, that victory is already, it's already established. It's already going to, it's already, good is already, and God is already all, and there's nothing, nothing to fix, nothing to heal. I like that.
Is that Florence trying to speak?
Well, yeah, well, I'll speak. I think to start from working towards God means that you're already separated from Him. And yet what we want to realize in any healing is that oneness with God, where there is no sickness, sin, or disease. I love this, that it's a very simple prayer. I am the spot where God shines through. He and I are one, not two. I think that establishes a fact of that perfection, oneness with God. Therefore, perfection, working from perfection, not up to perfection. I just like that. I think it's simple enough for us to imbibe.
Thank you. Bruce?
Well, a lot of times we hear about the word hope, and it's such a wonderful thing. But our hope is that our eyes and understanding are open to see present perfection, because after all, God is here and with us always. He's guiding us always. So our hope is that we awake to that, not that it become a fact, because it is already.
Yeah, thanks.
I do like that thought, work from God instead of up to God. And whenever I feel like I'm sort of crawling through the mud, I know I'm doing it wrong. So
I think it was well, this watch kind of fits in with the testimony we heard on Wednesday about the healing of the eyes too, because she was talking about, you know, she started working from that perspective of I can see.
Yes.
You know, even though mortal mind was saying, no, it's, you're not there yet. It's like, no, I am there yet. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember too, Adam Dickey or someone had said, he described prayer as not a request, but more of an appropriation, a claiming of something that's current and present.
Yes. The present realization of truth. I think that's what Mrs. Eddy says. And we know in our watching and treatments, we always start with perfection, right? You declare the all power, all presence of God. You start there, and then you handle any of the other issues that seem to be. And then you end again powerfully with that all power of God. Otherwise, your watch, unless you're feeling God's all power, your watch isn't worth much. And that's why in the watch last night, it was said, get where you really feel and know. And it was all about God being all in all, the only power, the only presence. Therefore, disease is not present, nor are a list of other things.
Okay. It can't be. I mean, also, the sentence from Science and Health, that perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe.
Yes.
Should become the basis of our thought and demonstration. So,
thanks. Yeah. Very, very start basis of it. You're not trying to, as Karen was saying, fix or change anything. You're not trying to change matter. You're not. There's no matter to change. It is in your thinking. So get your thought right. Watch your thought, not your body, Mrs. Eddy says. Carrie sent an article that applies to this called Know and Let, 1925 issue of the journal. There are two words which it were well to understand if we would progress in Christian Science. They are know and let. For to know the omnipotence and omnipresence of God and the nothingness of evil, and then let truth do the work, is true wisdom. The writer was once taught a lesson when she needed it very much. From her window shade, from her window shade. The room in which she was seated was in shadow, but just outside the window, the sun was shining, the birds were singing, and the trees and flowers were beautiful. She realized that all she needed to do, or she realized that all that separated her from the beauty and loveliness of outside was a shade which had been pulled down. She pulled up on the shade and then let go, and immediately the room was flooded with sunshine. The beauty of the trees and the flowers could be appreciated. So it is with many of our problems. We work and we work on them and we work and we work and work. And sometimes we wonder why the problems are not solved. Now, it may not be because the work we have done is not correct. And surely truth has not failed, nor because there is not health, happiness, and an abundance of ever-present good, but simply because we have not let go of the false belief. All the goodness and peace and joy that any of us could possibly need is here for us, and it is only our material sense that would seem to deprive us of the blessings which are rightfully ours as God's children. Let us, knowing the power of God, rise superior to the testimony of the material sense, which seems to be darkening our consciousness, and let the sunshine of truth and love flow in. Let us trust God, for he never fails. You know, often you get where you are grinding, you know. You can't let it go. You gotta be working, constantly work. Well, in doing that, you're building the problem up. It's also an element of fear, because you're being driven by fear, right? You are. You can't let it go. That's that old statement, let go and let God. You do your work, most definitely, and then having done all to stand. But if you keep grinding and I got to work, Mrs. Evans used to call it the three-finger treatment or something. You know, you sit there with your fingers on your forehead and be frowning and taking it all so seriously. And that's actually in that Christ and Christmas book, too, where, someone.
Mrs. Evans.
Yeah, right. Someone by the bed with their fingers on her forehead, you know, looking so intense. That's not it, and that's not a good watch either. You've made a reality of it. You work, establish the kingdom of heaven right here and now, and then know God is doing the work, and the shade is, let the shade be pulled up, and you'll see the glorious kingdom of heaven all around you, right here and right now. So these are very important points, and they have nuances to them, which is why we go over them. So, Jeremy, the golden text.
Psalm. God has spoken once. Twice I have heard this, that power belongeth unto God.
Yes, thank you. any comments on that now, or?
I was just remembering the testimony a while ago about how my practitioner had told me something, and apparently at the time I did not understand it at all. And then much later, like, she didn't mention it again, but I thought of it, and then I understood it, and then I was like, oh, twice I have heard this.
Well, it happens. You know, I've noticed it. I know Florence has said it too, where, you know, you'll tell someone something and then maybe months later, oh, I read this or I saw this. And you know, it is what you'd been told earlier, but it didn't, for some reason, impress you. It didn't register, didn't sink in. So sometimes that needed twice, yes, sometimes even more so. It's repeating and defeating, Mrs. Eddy says.
I think that's also why the many different writers or it's good to read different ones, because it said the same thing, but it said in a certain way, and that resonates with some people. So,
thank you. Very true. Absolutely. Bruce?
Well, I think of the love of God. He'll give us a reminder, and then he'll be with patience. He'll give us another reminder. He's always guiding and leading us. It just shows the loving nature of our Father.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right.
I think it's also your state of thought, too. You know, like I used to think I was receptive, and I remember after coming to Plainfield that so much that I had read, and I'd read it before, I could quote it, but things would just start to come alive. And, you know, it just, that my thought had changed. I guess I was finally ready for it. And it just, you know, I just like, wow, I couldn't believe the stuff I was reading. And I was like, I could read it before, and it was just kind of like it washed over me. And then after coming here, it started to sink in.
Thank you.
This is really true, because so often lately I've noticed that I hear things differently, and I've been reading them for years. I've read The Signs of Health for years, and I guess I didn't get it, but now I'm starting to get glimpses of ideas and truth. So for this, I'm grateful to come to Plainfield.
Thank you, Sari. Well, and that is why we're taught to keep reading the textbook over and over again. It will keep unfolding to you. That was Martha Wilcox was asked, what if you aren't having a problem, it's not being met? Read Science and Health. But if it's still not being met, read Science and Health. Read Science and Health. Read Science and Health until you get it. And you will get it, because it's all there and perfect now. Gary?
Well, and I would ask, what's the difference, you know, sort of before Plainfield and after Plainfield? And I think one of the differences is, you know, we have learned here, we have to push ourselves. We have to get out of our so-called comfort zone and really live our oneness with God. We have to really be, not just talk about it, but be God's image and likeness. I mean, this is a huge thing, and it's not an easy thing, and it's a very transformative thing. And there's no compromise with God, because if we aren't living what it really means to be God's image and likeness, you know, we're going to be forced to do so. We'll have problems. We'll have challenges. We'll have whatever it takes to get us to realize who and what we really are. And this is what a good church is all about, I think.
Yeah, that's the definition of church. Browsing.
Mrs. Eddy said she. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Right.
I was just going to say that Mrs. Eddy said she had to read the Bible, you know, the Science and Health. She had to study it and read it herself. So if she had to.
Yeah. Just read that recently. Yep. She was a scribe under order. She was just writing as fast as she could to get as the ideas came. So this is God's word to us, and we must treasure it and love it and work with it. I'll accomplish many great things. Go ahead, who wants to speak?
There were some interesting comments in Matthew Henry's Complete Bible Commentary on this. He said, God has spoken it, and I have heard it once, yea, twice. He has spoken it, and I've heard it by the light of reason, by the events that have concerned me, heard it by the light of revelation, by dreams and visions, and by the written word. Though God spoke it but once, I heard it twice, heard it diligently, not with my outward ears, but with my soul and mind. And in the lesson this week, Mrs. Eddy asks, can deity be known through the material senses? That's from Science and Health, page 284. We find that when we hear what God says diligently with our soul and mind, we are using our spiritual sense and the one mind that we reflect from God.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a very good explanation of what we've been talking about, why you hear it more another time than not the first time. You're hearing with your spiritual sense. You're all the things that have happened to you or leading up to your receptivity of this idea. And always remember, God is the great teacher. It's God. So often people, oh, what should I work with now? What should I work with now? Well, what is God telling you to work with? He's the teacher. Very often when someone calls for help, and I will just turn to the passage that I need to be knowing. And that's how it is with all of us. So he's the teacher. He's unfolding to you what you need to know and hear if you're listening.
Yes. It's amazing. Some of the comments or some of the messages that some people get, it's just, working with it, or you hear it and don't pay attention to it. Someone yes. brought attention to this last gratitude in science and health. And she's talking about, but since the reading of science and health turned my thought toward the light, I have found that as far as I am willing to receive the word and live it, all comforts have supplied me. That's so beautiful. That's why Mrs. Eddie chose that as the last testimony.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you. Now, William McKinsey wrote something interesting, another article Carrie sent, Mind versus Resistance. We are quite familiar with the words of the psalmist when he said, God hath spoken once, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. Then the question, why twice? Perhaps because it is necessary for human beings to deny the claim that evil is power, as well as to understand and ascertain that good is power. This is the fact, however, that mind intelligence only is power, and that which resists is always overcome. And then to comprehend that evil is not actual power, but only a phase of resistance to good, and that it is never positive, but ever negative, being mindlessness, non-intelligence, stupidity, barbarism is to understand its temporary nature and ultimate dismissal into nothingness. Prophecy marches on to its fulfillment, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So, and didn't you once say something about resistance or something that struck you? Do you remember that? You know me?
Not offhand.
Okay, well, anyway, that might have been that. Evil is not actual power, but only a phase of resistance to good. So if you seem to be experiencing evil, seeming, or seeing it, remember, it's only a phase. It's a resistance to good. And when you think about it, it's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The resistance to accepting God, a resistance to accepting the commandments, the Sermon on the Mount, or living this life, this goodness, life of goodness. It's a resistance to doing that. And so you seem to be having this bad dream of things going wrong.
Yeah, it's really the resistance to the truth, to the facts, the spiritual facts that are the truth about whatever situation you're in, right?
Yeah, so you can ask yourself if something seems to be troubling you, what truth are you resisting? Why aren't you accepting this truth? What is it?
Florence wrote an article about that, I think. Well, I asked Florence, did you write an article about if you're not getting the healing, you're resisting something?
I don't remember the title of it, but I remember writing something.
Bill Cox, too, she talks about that with that woman where she saw her husband was drinking. And she said, "You're resisting the truth." And then, "I'm not resisting the truth." And she said, "Then why are you seeing the wrong picture?"
Right.
And then it filled the situation.
Yes.
All right, Mrs. Eddy instructed the woman to stop believing in drinking or something like that.
Yeah, or she said, the person, Martha Wilcox, said, "Oh, you know, you're the drunkard. You're the one drinking right. it." And she said, "Oh, I don't know that way." Yeah. But if you see it in another, then you've got to check your own thought.
Right.
That's why this article, or at least a piece about what alcohol really is wonderful, because my members of my family, they drink at holiday things and celebrations. So I go in with that.
Yeah, and maybe you can share that article with us. And also, Florence, you can share the article with us that you wrote once we came together.
I remembered that thing.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, it was something I got. It's sort of a paraphrase from Laura Sargent's book, but with non-resistance, the truth is understanding. Is that the
point? Oh, yeah. That's right. Non-resistance to truth is understanding. Then when we stop this resisting and questioning, how can this be true, or whatever goes on subtly in your thought as you're reading it, then you begin to comprehend it once, twice.
Another story about a healing. And this woman, and I've forgotten the names of the people involved, but the woman was talking to the practitioner, "But my husband is still smoking." And the response was, he will stop smoking when you stop smoking.
Right.
He's not fuming or something.
Fuming about things.
That was the big wake-up call for me when I first read that. When you're trying to change somebody, and then you gotta, it's all within yourself. And you see, if you resist that truth, you'll continue along your path. These are things that we resist, you know. "Oh, it's not me, and he does need to be changed, and I have you're resisting that truth that God made everyone in his image and likeness, and it's up to us to declare it and see it and know it to be true. That doesn't mean you have to have that person or situation in your soup, as we're taught here. But you have that responsibility to see it correctly, as Jesus saw in science the perfect man.
You got to get the log out of your own.
Yep. Cast the beam out of your own eye. And this is all relating to our topic, our glorious topic of God. So, Karen, I think here is a good place, you know, if you want to share your poem on reality.
Okay. Well, I have one copy. I think I got it when I ordered something from Mary Baker Eddy Institute. But I have one copy of Individual Christian Scientist. And in this, and I just recently looked at it, and I found this beautiful poem called Reality. And it says, "If God doesn't know it, there's nothing to know. If God didn't sow it, there's nothing to grow. Unless he fashion it, favor it, have pride in it, can reality abide in it? If God doesn't see it, there's nothing to see. If God couldn't be it, there's nothing to be. But if his tender love enfold it, embrace it, nor time nor tide erase it. If God didn't plan it, it isn't a plan. If God couldn't bless it, it isn't for man. God made the heavens and earth and all that is therein, and for his glory was every man created. If God doesn't know it, there's nothing to know. If God didn't sow it, there's nothing to grow. Unless he fashion it, favor it, have pride in it. Can reality abide in it? If God couldn't hear it, it's never been heard. If God didn't say it, it isn't the word. But if he order it, honor it, rejoice in it, then hear truth's voice in it. And this is Words and Music by Dorothy Chancellor Curry. And somebody did find the music to it, and I guess it's on SoundCloud.
Oh, good. Well, maybe we can sing it. I'll pass it on to Bruce.
We'll pass it on to our music committee.
Yeah. A good message. Thank you. So called Reality. So there's something else that I thought was very helpful this week that Carrie again sent. There's an article on strength and freedom by a Betty Bell. Now, I hear sometimes with people, you know, feeling, well, they're not, they feel weak. Pages, see, I have it in here, I have my Science and Health, but there are certain pages in Science and Health which deal with that. And you should be familiar with them. They're the ones about because mortal mind is kept active, must it pay the penalty in a softened brain? It starts on 384 and goes to 387. And you should be familiar with it. And very often, when Mrs. Eddy speaks about strength or energy, she precedes it, especially energy. What word does she precede it with? Do you know?
Divine.
Yes, thank you. Divine energies. Divine. Your motivation to get up in the morning needs to be divine. If you're just slumping around, well, that doesn't work. It goes back to what Florence read this morning about your purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And in the morning prayer. The divine energies are going to keep you going, and you're not going to be tired. It's a truism. So if ERA tells you for any reason you're tired, you didn't sleep enough, you've been sick for 3 months, I don't know what the reasons can be, but you shut it down, because where the energy comes from is where?
From God.
In God.
All of it.
So if you are feeling tired, what does it show?
You're not in the right mind.
Yes.
It means you
don't be in the reflection.
Pardon me, Florence?
No, I said you're not being the reflection. Something is blocking.
Blocking your reflection?
Yeah. You're not aware of your divine purpose and ready to go.
Yeah, the children don't. Trouble with
yeah,
that.
The children don't have any. That's right. Their divine energy is going all the time. That's why we're all pooped in.
So. You're tired. You are think that you are doing it personally,
right?
Separately from God. You're weighed down by a false sense of responsibility. Now you need to let go. God, I'm your humble servant. You show me the way, and I will follow you. And He will give you anything you need to do it.
And Bruce proves that over and over, because he's out working construction and other things and his garden and with endless energy and joy. So he's proven it. That's why when people speak from things they've proven, it has clout to it.
Yeah, because he knows we don't have to do this. We get to do this.
Thank you. It's a privilege to do it. And we're joyful in it. And that statement from Nehemiah, this day is holy unto the Lord. Neither be you sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength.
Yes.
And I know for a fact when I've been feeling weak or whatever, and then usually I get sick because I've been depressed. If you lose your joy, then you're going down the chute to shoots. So please, I don't care why you think you don't have your joy. It does not matter. It doesn't. Your joy, like your strength, is from God, and no man takes it from you. No situation takes you from it unless you give it away. Do not give those things away. They're God-given. You hold fast. All these things are biblical. So remember that. The joy of the Lord is your strength. It's the divine energies, that one in Science and Health about that. Let us feel the divine energy of spirit bringing us into newness of life and recognizing no mortal nor material power is able to destroy. Have you given some power to a mortal or a mortal situation that you think is upsetting you or destroying you or can take life from you or take joy from you? disobedience to the first commandment. You'll suffer till you stop it. Okay? Get back to what you know and prepare for it. Because we started out with the watching point, the absoluteness of it. These things seep away from us if we're not standing porter at the door of thought. Now, in this article, name is Betty Bell, strength. Strength is the vigor and vitality of life and the foundation of all action. And strength alone is found in spirit. And you think of all the things that we see the early prophets do, including Jesus and Mrs. Eddy. They had no limitation on their strength, did they? They were always up and working. Mm-hmm. And the citation we were given, I was given often by Mrs. Evans, is in this lesson, in the responsive reading. God is my strength and power, and he maketh my way perfect. So when you're feeling in the dumpty dumps, get up and know this. God is my strength and power, and it is he that maketh my way perfect. My strength and power come from him alone. It's not in this mortal body that's sloughing around. It's in God. And when you feel motivated by God, when those divine energies come over you, you will not be a couch potato, which I must admit sometimes I am, especially on these cold winter days. But occasionally a couch potato is okay, but just don't let it dominate your life. Let the divine energies come in and renew you. It's amazing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, there's a season for everything.
And there's a season for everything, yes. Now, I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago in the roundtable that there have been these news articles called Virtue Medicine, which to me is a sign of the times, and it's a sign of Mrs. Eddy's leaven of truth operating. Virtue medicine. Doctors are finding that when people express certain qualities, they're, guess what? Their health improves. Their health. The first one we talked about in length was gratitude. The second one they mentioned was honesty. I won't go into these as much today as that first one, but honesty, the author of the article said, you know, even if we would tell his wife a little white lie that I'm going to be home for dinner tonight, honey, when he knew darn well he was probably going to have to stay late and work. That little lie would kind of gnaw on him in this integrity. So honesty is spiritual power. Dishonesty, human weakness, which forfeits divine help. Then the third was charity, giving. This is a basic principle in science we all come to get. And after a certain amount of time, you need to give. You don't come to church just to plunk yourself down and get. Let the new people do that, but you're to be praying and working so they will feel the divine energy come over them. This is why we do our watching on Tuesdays and Saturday evenings. This is why we watch. And if you're not watching, there's a part of you that is also not giving. And then the fourth, the more recent one, was courage. Courage. And courage isn't just doing something you're afraid to do. What is courage?
It's the moral strength to do and say what's right at the moment.
Thank you, Bruce.
Good. Very good.
Yes. The moral strength to say and do what's right at the moment. And we all have that. This too is God-given. You do it more and more, you're going to feel better. It saps at your strength when something's going on. Saps at your health. When something's going on and you sit that's not right, and you sit silently and take it in. Courage. So gratitude, honesty, charity, courage. I don't know how many they're going to go over, but those are the ones so far. And I liken it back to miscellaneous writings. God's preparations for the sick. You know the answer to that?
Potions of his
qualities. Potions of
his qualities.
Thank you. I love that. Think about it. It's so wonderful. His potions, you don't have to take that medication. work on gratitude, honesty, charity, courage, and there are many other potions of his own qualities. Let unselfishness, goodness, mercy, justice, love, the kingdom of heaven reign within, and sin, disease, and death will diminish until they finally disappear. This is acknowledging your oneness with the Father. And in doing that, you will find tremendous healing because God's not sick. You can't be sick. It's getting very simple. Okay, now there was another article that someone had sent to me a while ago. It's a very good article, one of the best I've read on this topic. It's under copyright, though, and the name of it is You Can Revise the Past. And it's by an Elaine Fallis, I think, but it's from, I don't know, more recently anyway. And she brings out that she says in the article, and I'm bringing this up today because New Year's is sometimes a time when people think about the past. They say it's a time for reflection. Well, if it's good reflection and you remember, as we've been taught here, if it wasn't good, it never happened in divine mind, then it's good to think of the past in that way. Only the good is real. Is that him, says Bruce, right?
Mm-hmm. It most certainly.
All right. So she writes, do you ever find yourself wishing you could change the past or at least not let it adversely affect the present? Then perhaps you'll be intrigued, as I have been, with this statement Mrs. Eddy writes in her book, Retrospection, Introspection. Quote, the human history needs to be revised and the material record expunged. One's human history, the sum of one's past daily experience, appears to be a blending of good and evil elements, with each side struggling for dominance. But this sense of life needs to be revised, literally seen again. We need to take a different view of the thoughts, deeds, and events that constitute our human record. And as we do, we're able to correct and redeem that record. Now, the word revise, to look over with care for correction, to alter, to amend, and the word expunge, to blot out, to rub out, to efface, to destroy, to annihilate. So, and then she also quotes in Science and Health where Mrs. Eddy explains, God good being ever present, it follows in divine logic that evil, the suppositional opposite of good, is never present. And I, you know, in working in the practice, and I know Florence too, we're getting people to know if it wasn't good in your past, you've got to see it never really happened. It was a bad dream. If you hold on to it and think about it and cherish it, because that's what you're doing. If you're holding on and thinking about it, you are cherishing it. It will seem to affect your present. Is that what you want? Be bitter, resentful, upset, crying, condemning. That's what all that leads to. We talked clearly a few weeks ago with the lesson, God is the only cause and creator. If God didn't cause it, then there can be no effect from something God did not cause. Is that not right?
Yes, it is right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So don't hold on to this garbage. And then she goes, the expunging of the material record shows us that discordant events and personal trials never really took place. Note that in this process, the good is not lost. In fact, it comes to light in its full original strength, purity, untouched, and unsullied by materiality. Only the evil is eliminated. And she goes on, this isn't some Pollyanna thing. Christian Science doesn't ignore or excuse sin, but it doesn't identify and condemn man as a sinning mortal either. No matter how corrupt or base a human being may seem to be, he remains God's pure and perfect offspring. So, and it goes on to where she's telling how, you know, there was experiences where she just felt terrible, awful things had happened, unpleasant things, and she felt it was her fault. And she spent hours mentally trying to vilify myself of my host of shortcomings. And it wasn't until she read this statement in Science and Health that she really got to the bottom of it, revising it. By revising it, you go back and see what good maybe you've learned from that experience, because there's always good. So that's the revising of it. And then the expunging is to absolutely get rid of the false, erroneous pictures. She said she did get it right eventually, but it was only after she started to really work, and it took some time. And she said, I could discipline thought during the day and refuse to give in to the mental litany of self-condemnation. Mm-hmm. And then she also said, but then the other tricky thing that would happen was she would have these flashbacks, sudden, unsummoned, memories of past difficulties that would send me into a panic. I'd look hard at the memory, asking how were God's ever-present goodness and power operating right then? And I demanded to see that. And to my initial amazement, I would. And as I continued to practice revision, I found that even the memory of the worst incidences couldn't hide from me the compassion, wisdom, strength, and honesty I now saw had been expressed, right where previously I could only see evil, discord, disappointment, and fear. So the flashbacks from the past became lessons for the present. They made me defend my spiritual identity even more firmly. They reminded me that I was tempted to act some of the old character flaws to revise my view of myself and expunge belief in those flaws on the spot before they could take shape in my present experience. I guess you could say I began to reform. So,
this phrase keeps coming to me: accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with this.
Yes, that'll do it.
And also, when we're confronted with an evil situation, or if it comes back to us from our past, evil situations point to a truth that needs to be learned, or remembered, or appreciated. And if we take a difficult or bad situation and say, okay, God, what's the truth that this is a lie about? That is the reform that is being talked about here. It's to reform our thinking, to turn every situation to its spiritual reality. This is a real challenge, but it is the reform that heals the sick and raises the dead and makes life what it really is.
And you'll be dropping so much baggage, and you'll feel so much lighter and happier when you do that. So whenever the thought comes from the past, I mean, here we were, Mrs. Evans instructed us to say, if it wasn't good, it never happened in divine mind. And to really realize that is true. It's not poppycock thinking. It's true. It was a bad dream. And also from page 288 in Science and Health, the eternal truth destroys what mortals seem to have learned from error, and man's real existence as a child of God comes to light. So you keep the eternal truth, you keep that with you. You keep saying it when these bad memories pop up. What's the truth? As Gary just said, what is the truth about that situation? What did God say about it? And see God's presence and power there until it's totally annihilated. And sometimes maybe you won't be able to completely forget it, but it will no longer have its sting or its self-condemnation or all that awful stuff that comes with it. It'll just be, well, thank God I'm not that way anymore. Thank God that's all over now. Thank God it was only a bad dream. That's what it will be. Because you believe. Pardon me?
No, you have dominion over it.
You have dominion. And it is God-given dominion. Mm-hmm. God. So you have, and nothing can vitiate that ability bestowed upon man by God. So use it and demonstrate it, and don't go on and on with this past stuff, letting it torment you or haunt you or in any way upset you. If you do it, it's disobedience. Once you know better, it's disobedience, and you will suffer from your disobedience until you stop. So now we're going to end in a beautiful article again sent by Carrie.
Entitled, Be Still and See the Salvation of God by Peter Mackay in a 1907 Sentinel. And he writes, Dear Mrs. Eddy, I have many times desired to address you with a letter, but have refrained from doing so, lest I should trespass upon your precious time. Now that the desire is again upon me, I yield to the gentle impulse to take up the pen and pay tribute to your worth and work. I am a native of Scotland, the land of Wallace and of Bruce, of John Knox and Henry Drummond, and, as my name indicates, have come from a clan whose claim to chivalry is as clear as its title to valor. I should like to relate here an incident in the life of an eminent Scotch divine, Dr. MacDonald, better known in the Highlands as the Apostle of the North. During his ministry in a seacoast town, a number of fishing boats belonging to his parish were one day suddenly overtaken by a severe storm while the men were attending to their nets. Their safety being imperiled, a hasty retreat was made for the harbor. It was a race for dear life, for with every effort put forth by the struggling fishermen to reach their place of refuge, which lay several leagues leeward, the storm increased in violence and threatened the destruction of the whole fleet. Becoming alarmed for the lives of their fathers and husbands, toiling against odds, the women folk of the town forsook their homes and congregated on the beach, where they mingled tears of distress and cries of despair with the salt spray of the roaring billows that lashed the shore. In the midst of this pandemonium, composed of hurricane and hysteria, Dr. MacDonald appeared on the scene, bareheaded, but clothed in calm, his white hair blown about by the ungentle gale. Lifting his eloquent voice above clamor and storm, the Scotch divine appealed to the wailing women to quiet their fears and cease from weeping. He beseeched them to be silent and to comfort their troubled hearts with the assurance that all would be well. Be still, he entreated, and see the salvation of God. Then, kneeling down upon the surf-beaten strand, the Reverend Doctor, with hands uplifted to heaven, invoked divine aid and whispered in prayer the peace be still with which Jesus calmed the tempest on the Sea of Galilee. Presently, the boisterous wind began to abate, the white-capped waves to subside, and the cries of hopeless despair were hushed almost to silence. The raging elements were rebuked. In a little while, one of the fishing boats succeeded in making the harbor, and shortly after, another reached the haven. But not until every vessel in the fleet had sailed into safety did the Apostle of the North arise from his knees with a holy smile, lighting up his serene countenance and words of gratitude falling from his lips. Beloved leader, I cannot help thinking what grand Christian scientists my countrymen will make when they come to learn and accept the religion which radiates from the heart, your religion of love. The day is hastening when all shall come into the unity of this faith, which is the gospel of good works. Paul McKay. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.